When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? This is the Talking Texas Podcast. My name is Daniel.
It's your boy, Double H.
We do the podcast every Tuesday. Remember to follow us on social media. We're on Twitter, at Talking Tactics. We're on Instagram, at Talking Tactics. If you're listening on Spotify, remember to give us a follow. If you're on Apple Podcasts, subscribe. It's free. Leave us a 5-star review, and we'll read it on the show. If you want to help the podcast out monetarily, we are on Patreon. So check that out. What did we talk about last week? We talked about the Joe Budden podcast.
Yeah,
we talked about. There was something else we talked about. You'll have to go on Patreon if you want to figure it out.
No, but it was definitely an interesting thing about people's relationship to people famous and our strangers. Mm-hmm. Wait, our fans, your friends, or are they still strangers?
And before we talked about, you know, can Pepe Le Pew be defended, or should he be defended?
Yes, Leave Pepe alone.
And you know, the conversation between streaming and going to the movies and all that kind of stuff. So, if you look, we've been doing that for a year and a half, maybe even more than that, almost 2.5 years. So there's almost 150 extra podcasts that are over there for you guys to go listen to. So I encourage everybody to go check out our Patreon page. Where can people find you?
So when people say they can easily view all the episodes once they sign up on the
Patreon. When you sign up, you get access to all of it. Okay. Since 2019, I think, is when we started doing it. So we've been terribly consistent, Half Hope. Like, I mean, we have to give ourselves credit.
I'm not a very consistent person. So yeah, I actually do feel that, yeah, man, I've, because, yeah, pretty much every week we say what's up, you know, so.
Anyway, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at halfoffootballhot.com.
Indeed, I'm at Daniel Taluk. Shout out to Carl. I would have to check his Twitter page, but we got some cool news from Carl today. I'm not going to break it. Maybe next week after I see what's happened on his Twitter page.
Yeah.
But check Carl. Carl Anka. Check him out, because he's doing fun stuff at the moment. So shout out to him. So this is going to be a mailbag episode. It was an international break. It's been one. There was some big news that happened earlier today about Sergio Aguero and this and that. But can I just get something off my chest, Half Hope?
Oh, man, please feel free.
Uganda lost to Malawi today. Yes, that Malawi. They needed 3 points. From 3 games, essentially, they just needed to win 1 of 3. They lost to South Sudan, a country that has only been in existence for like 10 years. So I don't even know how they're getting players, because really, they should just be kids out there. I don't know how South Sudan has players, but fair enough. They drew with Burkina Faso. Fair enough, you can do that. But to lose to Malawi, when you all they needed was a point. They just needed 1 point. One single point, and they lost 1-0. So today is not a good day for me in a footballing context. My team, is not in AFCON. They've been eliminated.
Freak.
The people who advanced were Burkina Faso won the group, I believe, and Malawi were second. So, yeah. And there's no third place qualification like they do in Europe. So that's it. 24 teams, 12 groups. We didn't make it. So, in a sense, I was trying to make myself feel better by saying, at least now I can enjoy the AFCON without the stress of my country being there. It's a lie I'm telling myself to make myself feel better.
You want that stress, man. You want that stress.
So today's not a good day.
That 2006 World Cup, man, it wasn't cool to watch. So Angola are here instead of Nigeria.
We're not talking about World Cups, have hope. Like, you're you're privileged. I'm just talking about the AFCON, bro. See, Nigeria, Cameroon, Ivory Coast recently, Ghana, to an extent, maybe South Africa. You guys have these conversations about, you know, oh, the World Cup this, the World Cup that. I just want to make AFCON, bro. That's all I want. And we messed up our last two. Look. Today's not a good day. Malawi, guys. Shout out to Kevin, one of my friends on Twitter. He's from Malawi. He's Malawian. So, yeah, not a good day. Soft, he was telling me.
Someone join us in Cameroon, man. That's unfortunate.
I mean, I'll be there in spirit, but you know, look, this one of my countries. I think this is when I really get in my Pan-Africanist bag. Like, these countries don't mean anything, bro. They're just lines on a map that white people drew. Yeah. Uganda isn't real. Nigeria isn't real. These are the creations of. I can just go into that bag and just live there for like a month until I'm back.
It would be interesting to see what did Africa look like before Caucasianism came through,
aka imperialism. Yeah. Anyway, that's where I'm at right now. I'm in my I'm in my Malcolm bag. I'm in my Stokely Kwame Ture bag. I'm in my Marcus Garvey bag right now. So that's my news for today. But let's talk about football news. Sergio Aguero, he's leaving Manchester City. Someone asks us a question. Gowan69, is Aguero the best EPL striker ever?
If we want to go via numbers, he isn't. If we want to go footballing-wise, I still say he isn't. So if we go via numbers, Shearer is the best. Okay. If we go via, let's now look beyond the numbers, Shearer is still the best. Because I always use my thing, Dodd. Shearer's Dodd was Blackburn Rovers, which I think this was in 95. So I think he scored, okay, albeit there were more games and so forth, but I think he scored 40 goals. And that was with the Blackburn Rovers, you know, with the likes of what's it called, Sutton, Tim Sherwood. And his goals led Blackburn Rovers. So
if we look it up, I think Chris Sutton was actually scoring G's that season. Like, it's not like he was just there. Like, he was actually contributing to the team.
They nicknamed the way they were called SAS, Sutton and Shearer. Like, he was very good for Blackburn, but Shearer was the guy, you know. So again, it's taking away from Aguero. Like, let's focus on Aguero. Amazing striker. Mm-hmm. Superb striker. Yep. But I put out a tweet that I think rubbed people the wrong way.
I haven't read. Did it mention anything about a World Cup or the Champions League?
Let me actually show it to you so that maybe you can judge and say whether this was right or wrong by me. So this was my tweet.
Okay, let me read it how I read it. Premier League legend, one of the most iconic goals in Premier League or football history. Champions League flop, international flop, bunch of praying hands. Do the praying hands mean please don't kill me for this?
Yeah.
I think that's actually a high five, but people use them as praying hands. But anyway, I can agree to the Premier League legend. Definitely one of the most iconic goals in Premier League of football history, without doubt. Champions League flop. Let's wait until the end of this season and let's see what his role is.
Oh, no, but against Dortmund.
As of right now, I would say an underperformer. Internationally, that one's more tough. Because
Daniel, you're way too nice, man. You know nice guys finish last. You know that.
Internationally, I don't put that on him. Because that's more the coaches went with Higuain over him.
He played games. And
I know he did, but he wasn't the main number nine. Even though at times you would have thought he would have been.
You had games, bro. You had games at the Copa America and you had games at the World Cup. There were times when you started as striker. Not always, but times where you started on you had enough to do something. And on numerous occasions, you didn't do anything. Now, fair enough, you're not a starter. If you came in and made an impact, bro, all right. Get out.
I call Higuain an international flop. because you got the chances. You were the main guy, and you didn't help Messi get it done.
Who's the better striker? You would say Aguero or Higuain?
For me, Aguero.
Thank you.
Aguero but the coaches the didn't pick him. So I'm not gonna say you flopped.
No. Let's just go systematically. So you said Aguero is a better striker, yes?
Yes.
So he's a better striker, which means that if you're given an opportunity, you should, as a better striker, show why you are better than Higuain. Whether it's 15 minutes, whether it's 20 minutes, or so forth. In that time, in a Copa America game, or in a World Cup game against an opponent, you should say, what's up to? You should be able to prove that, yeah, I'm that dude.
I'm trying to come up with an example. Would you call Joe Cole an international flop? He was in the team, yes. He didn't have the greatest impact on the England team, but he wasn't put in the position to have that influence. And I would say that Aguero is kind of in the same boat you have the talent, but he wasn't put in the position to be the guy. So how can I call you a flop? You were disappointing. But
do you know why I can't call Joe Cole a flop? Joe Cole isn't a flop because, first of all, he was not played in his strongest position, which is number 10 free roll. Mm-hmm. Secondly, England and their psychology and mentality just was at odds with the kind of football that Joe Cole was playing. Aguero, you play like an Argentine, and Argentina always played like Argentina. You are a striker, they play you as a striker. So there is nothing there. And also, 2014 was a damn good team. So there is nothing there to... You don't have as much of an argument to excuse yourself as much as Joe Cole does. Because, Aguero, you were not played out of position. You were in a very good team, and you were played in there as a striker.
I'm just thinking of like people who I would consider their international career wasn't as good as I thought it should have been. And it's not really their fault. And Joe Cole was the first person that came to mind, but I hear you. It's not a one-to-one. Like Champions League, I can go with you. I will call you a flop. Mm-hmm. You didn't make a final, but you're the greatest striker in England. At international, though, I don't know. But see, I don't even think people would be too mad at you because most people don't put as much stock as you do or I do into the international game. So they're probably just more mad at the Champions League bit, but I don't know how you could argue that one. Now, the timing of your sentiment, it's, you know, City fans are going to be on Twitter. They're going to be reposting the goal against QPR or whatever other goals he scored. Like, you know, nobody wants to see like the realism in a time where we're supposed to be happy and congratulatory and all that. So can you click the breaking news? Your tweet was 8:34 London time. And when did this Sport Bible tweet go out?
8:23.
So like 10 minutes later, this guy's like, hey, chill. chill with your happiness. Like the moment I find out, let's just throw water.
So here's the thing. And this just shows you how people, especially some football fans, are twisted. Someone replied to this by saying that if someone dies, would you talk about, yes, they said this, would you talk about all of the bad things that they did? Then I responded by saying that, oh, I didn't know that Aguero died. I just thought that he's leaving Man City this summer.
That's a death in many people's perspective.
And Daniel, that is sick. A guy leaving, I don't care how much you care about your club. You listen to this to someone and dying, that's sick.
Do you know how we talk about how people get their meaning from their football club? Mm-hmm. And that, you know, you'll find Chelsea fans for our context who like, I don't watch anything but Chelsea. And that's really, I don't like football. I like the community of Chelsea, whatever that means. So if a player leaves Chelsea, they might as well leave your life. Because I'm not going to watch them internationally. I'm not going to watch them when they go to Serie A. I'm not going to watch them when they go to Bundesliga. I don't watch that football. That football doesn't matter. I only watch what happens at Stamford Bridge and wherever else Chelsea go. So Willian goes somewhere. Well, not Willian. That's maybe a bad example. Hazard leaves Chelsea. You think that there are many people who were like ride or die Hazard guys because he was playing for Chelsea. The moment he goes to Real Madrid, it's like he's falling off the face of the earth, basically. That's what this is like for some people. Like a player leaves Manchester City. That's basically all I care about in football. So when Sergio Aguero does go, It almost is like he's dead to me now. What is it? How many City fans do you think have followed David Silva back to La Liga?
Not
1%?
Well, I know one guy, Nasser. So that's about it.
But he because he's in the Have Hope football sphere, I would assume he cares more about just one club, because that's normally the type of person you would attract. Most City fans, I don't think they're following David Silva's career or where Yaya Toure is or Vincent Kompany went to Anderlecht. Like, that's not happening.
Mm-mm.
So I'm not going to sit and watch Sociedad games just because I like David Silva. Nah, he's dead to me. And that's what this is. I don't agree with the correlation that the guy made between death and leaving. He's not even retiring. He's just leaving your club. But, yeah, I can understand his perspective, even if I don't agree. Where do you think Aguero should go?
Ooh.
And does this make the Haaland sweepstakes slightly more interesting? I think it has to. But
No. Let's first deal with Man City, because Haaland is now trending online now. So,
of course.
My thing is, if it's a case of they have to get a striker, I don't think Pep believes so much in Gabriel Jesus.
Can you say that line again? Sorry.
Yeah. So I don't think Pep believes so much in Gabriel Jesus, and really the number one striker out there is Haaland. So unless Pep is maybe trying to get another midfielder and just focus on a false nine and sort of, and maybe he's not looking for an out-and-out striker, Haaland seems the most obvious option. But I don't think that. I think it's wrong for us to assume that they want Haaland. I mean, obviously, we may jump into the Haaland conversation beyond this, man. But Aguero, he's still a very good striker. Now, let's do some math. Who is one of Aguero's good friends? He's Argentine. He's small. He's pretty good at football. Hard to tackle.
No, I guess I shouldn't say that. Messi. I was going to say Maradona, but then I realized. Messi.
So,
Barcelona?
Laporta could be like, because I've heard Laporta and Haaland, but let's keep it on Aguero. Laporta can be like, Lionel, what if I bring your best mate to Barcelona? Let's see what you guys can do. So we have you, we've got Aguero, we're evolving Usman Dembele, we're evolving these dudes. So is the question of where should he go, or where do I think he will go? Because Real Madrid still have Benzema, Bayern Munich still have Lewandowski, Inter still have Lukaku. I don't think he'd fit into the Juve setup. Should.
Okay.
Barcelona. Where will he go? You know what?
I think he ends up in
Chelsea. Goes back to Atleti.
So you want two 33, 34-year-old guys? I don't know if that makes sense.
I'm not sure how long Suarez's contract is, though. Because I've been hearing, again, this is just talk, I've been hearing Suarez Liverpool. Because, you see, for me, Aguero can still start for a top European club.
As for who's the greatest Premier League striker ever, I think Shearer's probably the easiest one to go for.
He is.
Do we consider Thierry Henry an out-and-out striker, or do we have to consider him more like a forward instead of a number nine?
Complete forward.
Yeah. So we'll go Shearer. List of footballers with 100 or more Premier League goals. See, out-and-out strikers that I'm seeing. We're not including Wayne Rooney on this list. Shearer, Cole, Andy Cole, Aguero. We're not going to count Henry. Fowler, Jermaine Defoe is number 8. Harry Kane's number 9. Owen 10, and then we get into, you know, Les Ferdinand, Teddy Sheringham, Van Persie. Hasselbank is number 14 on this list, by the way. Robbie Keane, Nicholas Anelka is number 16. He has more goals than Dwight York. Steven Gerrard, Jamie Vardy is in top 20? Romelu Lukaku is top 20?
What?
Yeah, he has the same amount of goals as Ian Wright in the Premier League. Look, Lukaku is G'ing up, bro. Everton Lukaku on something. Dion Dublin, Heskey, Crouch, Bent, Drogba, and Letizia. If it's not Shearer, then it's Aguero. but it is sheer, so we can move on. Next question. Adage 3. El Nene recently said that Mo Salah is the African GOAT.
After his brace... Where's El Nene from?
Egypt.
There we go.
After his brace today, Salah has 45 goals and 71 international appearances. What would he have to do to be Africa's greatest ever player? And how much do internationals factor into that with parentheses AFCON? Okay. Firstly, El Nene, that's his boy. We get it. And for El Nene, he's probably correct. In El Nene's context, the greatest African footballer he's seen is probably Mohamed Salah, especially up close. So I won't begrudge him that assessment. For us, it's different. So what would Salah have to do in order to become a GOAT, like the GOAT? So that means overtaking George Weah. Firstly, I need a Ballon d'Or, however much that's worth.
Wait, sorry. Did the guy mention Weah, or you're mentioning Weah?
I'm mentioning Weah because I think Weah is the GOAT. He's the greatest African footballer of all time.
It might be Eto'o. Like on the down low, it might be a Samuel Eto'o. I've always thought it was Weah.
Okay.
I've always thought it was Weah, but when you look at what Eto'o has done,
yeah,
bro.
Okay. I had to step back from the mic. I'm thinking. I'm in deep thought. Now, my insistence, perhaps, on Weah is fed more by how elders speak about Weah than my own personal perception. The same way older people would talk about Pele or Maradona. That's kind of the same way I would hear things about George Weah. The way people would talk about George Weah is just next. It's different. Like, I wasn't really around for peak Weah. Eto'o, I do have a great frame of reference for mostly his career, and maybe not the Weah Mallorca
was
days.
Bloody amazing. Weah right. was bloody amazing.
So my assessment, again, is more, I'm taking on like how the elders speak about Weah. Or just people who are older than me. Maybe not elders, but, you know, 40, 50, that kind of age. For me, like, Eto'o is the best African footballer I've seen. But I try not to make what I've seen be the standard. So the same way people will say Messi's better than Pele. You never watched Pele, so how would you know? Go by what they said back in the day. Ronaldo's better than Maradona. You never watched Maradona, so how would you really know? I'll take their word for it over my eyes. You're right. And even I'm, of course, I'd be very biased if I said Drogba. I could never even say that. I couldn't fix my lips.
I couldn't say Okocha. As much as I want to, I can't say Okocha.
Yeah, so like for the top three is Weah, Eto'o, in no particular order. And the third is kind of cloudy. You could put Drogba if you wanted. You could put Yaya Toure if you wanted.
Roger Miller.
I was going to say, if you want to go even deeper, you could say Roger Miller. Or if you want to get political, you could go like, you know, Eusebio. You could say Pele if you wanted. You know, you could go like Zidane if you wanted to go that way. But yeah, those are definitely the top two. Can Salah breach that? Obviously, people say, you know, Abu Trika and those kinds of guys as well. I don't want to discount, you know, all North Africans here. He has the Champions League. He has a league for Liverpool. He doesn't have an AFCON yet. I think he needs just a larger body of work, but there's something about him that's not like, if he feels like a forced star, if that makes sense. He doesn't have a gravitational element to him that I think Eto'o did or Drogba did exceptionally. Like, there's something about Salah that seems kind of forced, and his footballing ability is not A1. He's a very functional player in like the modern capacity of how we look at wingers and forwards. Just be fast, be clinical, and score a bunch of goals. Like, even the question itself mentions how many goals he scored in X amount of games. I mean, if that's how we're going about it, then fine. But there has to be some sort of sauce or flavor to your game for me in order to be like the African GOAT. I'm not just going, hey, he runs fast and gets in behind the defense and scores goals. That makes you the GOAT now? I don't want to bring that Messi Ronaldo-fication, especially the Ronaldo-fication, especially late stage Ronaldo, into like the football analysis, where just goal scoring just the accumulation of statistics equals goal. Nah, for me, there's a specialty to like Ronaldinho didn't have the best stats, but he's a GOAT because of what he was able to do on the ball and how he made you feel. And it's kind of what I'm getting to of how Salah's forced is that I don't feel a way when I watch Salah.
Basically, it's like this. Let me explain it to you. It's like this. When you look at George Weah, like, well, that's why he won the Ballon d'Or. That was a huge, massive, massive, huge Milan team, and he was the star of that team. That's why he was such a big deal. The Eto'o thing is actually interesting because Eto'o, for me, never got the respect that he deserved. That's why Pep saw, I'm just going to swap you for Ibra, you know, because I don't value you. Because the focus was, we've got Xavi, we've got Iniesta, we've got Messi, well, good. But then, you know, you now saw what happened when you got Ibrahimovic. So, but I think when you look at what Eto'o did, how clutch he was, how important he was, the goals he scored. The reason why I put Eto'o over Salah, because Salah is amazing, goal scoring and so forth. But why I put Eto'o over Salah is I look at those two Champions League finals that Eto'o was in. Like, look at that. I remember that 09 final. United were actually playing better. They were playing better, and they actually had Barcelona sort of on the ropes. But Eto'o's goal just changed the whole context of the game. I really watched Eto'o's goal again. He made Vidic sit down, you know? So, and then you then look at the goal he scored against Arsenal in the 06 final. You know, be for Pep and so forth. And again, that goal is what got Barcelona back in the game when they were looking for a goal and Ronaldinho didn't show up. So, those moments, Salah doesn't have any of those moments. Yeah, I'm sorry. And look, I love you, Daniel, but it is what it is. But those moments are what I think puts it, like, Salah doesn't have any of those moments there. What have you done? I can't give you kudos for scoring a penalty in a Champions League final. I can't do that. For Salah, for him to be even in the conversation for Weah and Eto'o, you have to either win a Ballon d'Or, which is what Weah did, and you have to come up big in a Champions League final the way that Eto'o did. You do that, you're not in the conversation. As well, you've got to win it. And I've seen Weah, I can put the AFCON to one side because it's Liberia. So if you want to say what's up to Eto'o, say what's up in a CL final, you've got to win an AFCON.
Eto'o's the GOAT. He has to be, just based on accomplishments. And for me, playstyle. Again, like, I think Salah could win a Ballon d'Or because the nature of the Ballon d'Or has been twisted into who scores the most goals. So, like, Lewandowski would have won it last season. Was he the best footballer or was he the best goal scorer? Like, maybe you're probably the best person to talk about that given like the way you use definitions. But it just feels like if you accumulate the stats, you'll get a Ballon d'Or nod. Unless, you know, it's a World Cup year and you're Luka Modric and you do all this type of stuff. And okay, we'll give it to the central midfielder this time. But be not confused. Score 50, 60 goals in a season, you'll get it. I don't know how valid a Ballon d'Or is. I know how valid it was, but how valid is it today after the duopoly of Messi and Ronaldo? It just seems like a race to who can score as many goals the fastest.
Ballon d'Or doesn't mean crap because like,
so I don't.
It's a political award.
My mind went for it because it is the most prestigious individual award. But the more I think about it, I don't know how much it means anymore. So I don't want to put Ballon d'Or in the context of it. It's a feather in the cap of Weah that he won it when he won it in the era that he won it. But I couldn't say the same for Salah, and that's not his fault. That's just how the award has evolved. He'd have to do a lot to be the GOAT, put it that way. Because the way he plays, nobody's ever going to look and be like, I want to play like Salah. If you go to the park, maybe if you're Egyptian, you would. But anybody else, I don't know anybody's going to the park like, yo, I'm Mo Salah. Unless you're a Liverpool fan, what does that mean? So you just kick it and run kind of? Or you just like, you're really good with left foot finishes? Like, I need something else. You know how many great... Are you putting Salah above, like, Michael Essien? Are we putting him above a culture? Are we putting him above... Pick somebody. Diouf?
How are you viewing it? Are you viewing it via stats or via your footballing ability?
Those are the latter.
Oh, footballing ability, then Salah doesn't sniff most guys. He doesn't sniff Essien, doesn't sniff Okocha, doesn't sniff Essien, doesn't sniff...
The era that we live in, you don't need to be great in terms of your overall ability. You just need to be functional.
Because see, now, this speaks to something that we were talking about on Saturday, which is that, are we living in an era where, because managers now take center stage, we're seeing less individuals and people who are more effective are champion rather than guys who express themselves? So the age of a Ronaldinho can't exist in this era because a manager will not allow or afford the freedom for a Ronaldinho to exist. Because no, I need you to be functional and effective for my system because I'm king now. Manchester's best player, Manchester's star player isn't De Bruyne. Their star player is Pep. Liverpool's star player isn't Salah. Their star player is Klopp.
Yeah.
So,
you know how we sometimes talk about, and I definitely listeners in England and the States, they'll pick this. How if you're playing like youth football, one of the more important things, it's not about technique, it's not about skill, it's about effort and working for the team and just run until it hurts. That kind of stuff. I don't care if you have a stitch in your side, Daniel, just keep running like that, that kind of thing. Or just like, just get some fluids, go back out there and run some more. I wonder if that idea, especially when we think about how football is now with gegenpressing and high pressing and, just, you know, people keeping stats on how many kilometers you run, the how fast you run, this and that. I wonder if it's gone that way. Like, those people eventually, they won. You know what I mean? Like, there was a war between, I don't want to call it, like, eye test versus, like, stats, but more like, do you know how things have gotten, like, very computer nerdy? Mm. Almost the same way, like, the argument I would make with VAR. About how you're giving VAR to policemen and feds and they don't know how to use the technology properly. If you give a computer to a coach and you say that number 10 runs more, or maybe, let's go this way. We have two number eights. One, if we watch the game ourselves, we would say that number 8A is better technically. He's better on the ball. He can find a through ball. He might not be as physically dominant. His football brain is more advanced than number 8B. But if you look at the stats, number 8B, he has more sprints. He has a better running distance. Like the number of tackles, intercepts, like all of that stuff is better. So the coach would look at this. And if you just look at the numbers on your iPad or tablet, whatever, Samsung tablet, whatever it is, you'd pick B instead of A because I want those numbers in my team. And I think maybe those guys won, like the tablet merchants who just look at the, you know, those people on the sidelines who have like iPads and Microsoft Surface books, those people won, I think. And they're more likely to tell, I think we should play this guy because he has more physical attributes given the style of play that we're going through.
Has football gotten worse or has it evolved? That's the question.
Both can be true.
Isn't evolution improvement?
No. That's a misnomer. People think evolution, not the
Darwin. When someone says I've evolved, that's I've improved.
Not necessarily. Now,
if you say I've changed, now, have you changed for the better or for the worse? But if you say that I've evolved, is what I was before was... Basically, put it this way. Are you going to say that the intelligence of a caveman is greater than the intelligence of a human being
in 2021? No, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is not all change, because all evolution is change, gradual change over a course of time. Not all change can be classified as good. For instance, a person could be 6 feet tall, 150 pounds, young, fit, athlete, what have you. They get injured or an accident happens to them. Now you're 6 feet. You live a sedentary lifestyle, and over the course of 20 years, you know, you start eating cakes and this and that. You're not exercising as much. You're not as fit. And over the course of years, now you're 6 feet, and instead of being 100, whatever, now you're 300, 400 pounds. You've evolved, but you've evolved into a worse position. So not all change is good. It much in the same way, you could have somebody who's 400 pounds, and they evolve by working out and dieting and doing all that. They now get into a place where they're at a better weight. They're better physically. You know, they lose whatever health ailments or whatever. Like, it's not a linear thing where you just start at A, all evolution marches forward into this perfect space. No, like, things can go backward. You can change into worse place.
That's devolve. If it goes worse, that means you're devolving.
Devolving is the same as evolving.
What?
devolution. Devolution is evolution. It's just a bad evolution.
But it's different. Evolving is you are improving for the better.
This is semantic.
Yeah, of course it is. It's like, what are you on about?
Evolution is not necessarily a good thing. You can evolve by devolving.
That makes no sense. Either you're evolving or you're devolving.
Hold on, okay.
Let's consult Google. You're confusing this just for the sake of it, man. Come on, bro.
No, because you said, has football evolved or has it gotten worse?
Yeah.
I think it has evolved into something worse. But then you said, no, evolution is a good thing.
Yeah.
But I'm saying no. Like, evolution isn't necessarily good. And we can maybe leave it there and argue about this later. But,
yeah, look.
It's like philosophical English. Like, this is my bag. Like, we should stop here. Otherwise, we can keep going for 20 minutes. But I will take your definition. Okay. If evolution is a good thing, then I would say football has gotten worse in its progression, if we want to put it that way, even though I don't think it's a progression, but you know, it's gotten worse. And you know, the goals that someone like Tony Yeboah would score, we don't see those quite as often. You know why? It's bad XG. Why are you taking a shot from 40 meters out? Like, get closer to the goal.
I disagree. We can still see goals from, like, Tony Yeboah, but not like Ronaldinho against Chelsea. People also say, yo, this guy, the data tells me that he's good at long shots.
The data.
So because the data tells me that most of his long shots hit the target, walk the keeper, let's get this guy taking long shots, because probability is he'll either walk the keeper, he'll either walk the keeper to a parry, or he may even score a goal. But Ronaldinho is, there's no data to say there are three defenders in front of you. What the hell are you doing dancing around on the ball and thinking you can get a shot through there? No, pass the ball back, as well as someone, because there are three guys in front of you. You can't, there's no way to go through.
Ooh.
But Rijkaard is, I know this guy.
Yeah.
I've played the sport before, and I know what this guy is. I have a blueprint. Ronaldinho interprets the game however you see fit. Now, I'm going to give you just a general idea of what you should do, but really, Ronaldinho, have at it.
Can I steal your point from you?
Okay.
And this is one that you've made multiple times, and I think perhaps it'll get even worse. You said on multiple occasions that when you were playing football in school, and again, it kind of goes back to the English-American aesthetic, that the team, the B team, essentially, had better players in it, technically, than the A team. But the A team, because they were run, 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 work hard, work hard, the coach is more likely to pick those kind of dogmatic players who do that. I wonder now, would a Ronaldinho, even maybe in a place like Brazil, maybe not as much, but as the game evolves, perhaps a coach in a country that we would associate with a more open freestyle way of playing, maybe Ronaldinho is an extreme example because he was so good at what he was, but players of that style, maybe they're less likely to come through because you are going to see more A teams than B teams if you follow your example from me.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that's the problem, that in 10, 15 years, based on what coaches in youth leagues and, you know, in America, like elementary school, middle school, high school, the type of players that they're going to pick are going to be the Jordan Hendersons of the world. Just I'm going to look at my tablet and how much have you run today?
So, basically, this, like I said this before, I don't know whether I said it to you. So Rooney used to do this kind of five-a-side tournaments TV show way, way, way back. And this was just all with young kids. So, you know, all these young kids were playing and it was just like a tournament. And these kids were like really, really good. And they interviewed this kid and said, oh, you know, why don't you do 11-a-side? And just said, like, it's not fun.
Mm.
So a lot of these kids, and I know this for a fact because being in school, going to all weather pages, going and seeing, and just seeing how good these English players are, I know this guy will never do 11-a-side. Because if he goes to 11-a-side, they'll say, you know, dribble less, keep it simple, keep it basic, run more. So all that is taken away. And my older brothers, they told me that in England, you're trained to win. So from 8, 9, 10, 11 years old, the focus is, what do you need to do to win this game? But if you go to Spain, Brazil, Portugal, Italy, 8, 9, 10, no, play the game well. Forget about winning, play the game properly. Then we can deal about winning later on. But just play the game, as in, keep the ball on the ground, pass, keep it intricate, have great ball control, a great first touch, don't just hoof the ball, think about what you're doing and so forth. So by the time these guys are 15, 16, 17, 18, they can now build in the winning mentality and so forth, but they already have the basis of proper footballing quality. And you see it now with like a Mason Mount.
So I was trying not to use this name when I was coming up with number 8A and number 8B. I was like, just don't say this.
So basically, see, Mason Mount is... it's such an interesting case because, see, with Mason Mount, I know what it's about because I went to English school for 7 years. So I know what Mason Mount is. And I know what a Grealish or a Foden is, or a Sancho is. Sancho and Foden, and maybe even Grealish, probably end up in the B team. Mount would be in the A team, and he would be the guy that is most beloved by the coaches.
You know, it goes back to the Joe Cole point.
Yeah. England never knew what Joe Cole was. They didn't understand what Joe Cole was. Hence why Joe Cole, you were just born in the wrong country. Because England are a country where they would rather succeed they would rather fail their way than succeed another way.
Mm.
So for them, no, we have to succeed, hard work, spirit, pride, keep it basic, keep it simple, proper.
Passion, desire.
Rather than like, oh, because as I said again, like, whenever you see someone dribble, the English commentator will say, oh, here comes the party tricks, the flicks and tricks. But you now listen to an Italian or Spanish commentator like, oh, whenever someone does something like that. Because that's something that is championed. Mm. But what is championed in England is, oh, he ran back, he got stuck in. Oh, that's a good ball. Oh, very smart, smart play. But dribbling is skill, beating a man a step over is seen as, oh, the party tricks. You know, the flicks and tricks.
Can we get a shout out for the Comoros? First ever qualification for half.
AFCON. I was about to say, yeah, Comoros. Like, what? So,
shout out to Comoros.
Are they on an island?
I think so.
So they're next to Tanzania? It can't be right within the continent. It must be like an island offshoot.
Yeah.
Yeah, Comoros.
Congratulations, man.
Yeah, man.
Not taking anything away from Messi, Ronaldo, but would they ball in the 90s? Because from 2010 to 2020, this has been the worst era of defending.
Ooh.
From Matt the Barca boy. Would they ball in the 90s? I think the answer is yes. It's just to what extent. So they would be some of the better players from the 90s. I don't think there's any real debate about that. It's just that would we see them as two... Now, don't take it personally when I say we. Would we see them as two of the greatest players or arguably the two greatest players in the history of the game? I don't think so.
As a defender, what are you required to do now? Defend?
Play.
Play from the back, have good ball control and
pass. You gotta play.
So you're now having to do two things.
You have to back be a footballer then, and a defender.
Yeah. Back then, defend. Like, yeah. Please, no, the keeper is hoofing it. Defender just hits it long. You, like Maldini, Baresi, all Baresi had to do is defend. Now, Baresi was actually pretty good on the ball, but all you're required to do is defend. But now, you have to defend and now be good at playing out front from the back. So that means jack of all trades, master of none. You know, you can't focus on two things. You can only focus on one thing. You know, so...
Thoughts on Italy's chances of winning the Euros? I think they'll win it since they're underdogs and thrive well when they are. I think there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 stronger teams than them. Portugal, France, Germany, England, and Belgium. But I think Italy are like, they're, I can never call Italy a dark horse. Maybe even Spain I'd put above them. So they're like 6th probably on
the list. Real quick. Cuz I need an answer for this.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope it isn't the answer that I think it might be. Why is it called a dark horse? I've always wanted to know, and I'm like, is it what I think it is, or maybe it's not? So where does that come from, a dark horse? Oh god, he types away.
I'm trying to type loud so you can hear me typing. Okay. The term began as horse racing parlance for a horse that is unknown to gamblers and thus difficult to place betting odds on. The first mention of the concept is Benjamin Disraeli's novel, The Young Duke, in 1831. So it's a dark horse. Maybe dark is the unknown. So there you go. I guess that definition carries. Like that's what it means still.
Okay.
but I understood your trepidation when I was typing. Yeah. I would put them 6th or 7th. So I wouldn't call them favorites by any stretch. But you know, there'll be a team where if they get to a semi or if they get to a final, you'd understand it. Depending on, like, okay, where are they getting their goals from? How good is Marco Verratti? Is he fit? What's going on with, you know, Chiellini, Bonucci, those guys? Thoughts on this? Did you see the image with Conte pulling the tanker?
The heck? Tanker?
Okay, there was a big ship stuck in the Suez. Do you know about this? Like in Egypt, there was like a ship that was stuck
I saw
messing up the global distribution. What's it called? Supply chain management. It was messing all the supply chains up. So yesterday it was stuck in the canal for like 6-7 days. And I think they said every day that the ship was stuck in the canal, companies around the world were losing or were at risk of losing $10 billion. So $60 billion in trade was either stalled, lost, or affected somehow. So they finally got the ship unwedged from the desert, essentially. And Chelsea administration on Twitter, because it's Conte's birthday today. He's 30 years old. So they put like a chain around. It was not a chain, but like a link almost. On like Photoshop. I'll show it to you. It was like he ran and moved the ship.
okay, so this is fake, obviously. It's not real.
Oh, yeah. It's fake, okay. It's fake. Conte Suez.
Okay. Why is my first thought...
Because he's chained and he's black and it's work.
Oh, God.
So that was tweeted out by the official Chelsea account.
No, it wasn't.
Let me go to.
No, it wasn't. Come on, no, it wasn't. Please. Please. Daniel, please don't tell me it was.
I gotta find the... Look, man.
Why?
Okay, even if it was funny, which I have to admit, I chuckled a little bit. But I chuckled more so at the stupidity of why would you think that would just be okay, that you wouldn't have to delete it 20, 30 minutes later, however long. And the internet doesn't sleep, man. It's deleted. Otherwise, I would have gone to Chelsea FC on Twitter. But they had to get rid of it. Because let's say 70% of people, 80% of people saw it and laughed. There was the 20% that was like, okay, so you're really hooking up Conte to the shit?
My thing is that, why didn't you hook up Mason Mount to the shit? he walks hard. Like, have you seen this guy's walk rate? And here's the thing. This just shows you how sick these guys are. Kante, let's keep it real. Kante isn't strong. There's no evidence to say that Kante is particularly strong. That's the first thing. Second, so he wouldn't have any kind of strength. So he's not, strength is not his thing. Other thing is, I think there's only one game where he's shown his stamina, which was the game against Atletico. But my God, if anybody has better walk rate, it's Mount. So why the heck would you choose Kante for the ship?
Obviously, it was topical because today was his birthday. So Kante was all over Twitter. So maybe they were trying to do like a 2-for-1.
I tweeted, you know, Kante, you know how it has like suggestions?
Yeah.
The first suggestion is Kante racist.
So yeah, that was news from today. I was just like, well, why would you ever think that's a good idea? It's like, this is not a good idea. If Afro-Caribbean players from Gamma 6ix9ine stayed for their home teams, would Africa have a World Cup? Would their increased quality lead to them being allowed to have more teams in the tournament? And someone else asked, your thoughts from Just Call Me Teza, your thoughts and feelings on why so many Afro-Caribbean diaspora players neglect home nation to pick major countries, England, France, Spain, etc. So they want us to go in. Why?
It's very simple. So why people don't choose their home nations over the adopted nations?
Make it plain.
Home nations, bribery, embezzlement, disorganization, lack of coordination. Because again, we had Ben from the Hangouts.
No.
Well, so basically, he works for a newspaper in Nigeria, and he's a journalist.
Mm.
So he actually knows a lot of these players and stuff. And he said that no, there is bribery and embezzlement. That stuff happens. He knows for a fact this stuff happens. So if I'm a player, and let's just take Guinea. I've grown up in France, fully in France and so forth. I've rarely been to Guinea. I hardly go there. So unless I just want to be conscious and real and so forth, France have set me up in the youth team. They've shown that they want me, and I can see a pathway into this team. And oh, I would like to win an international trophy. France makes better sense. Whenever I say, oh my gosh, you traitor, I do that just out of a joke, man. I'm joking. Because if I'm being real, I'm like, I don't know you. I don't know your upbringing. I don't know how you are culturally. I don't even know how often you even visit said country. Zaha, just based on the kind of person he is and so forth, chose Ivory Coast. It would make total sense if Zaha chose England.
Mm.
Because he has been much more embedded in English culture and so forth than Ivorian culture. So it would make far more sense.
Do you know what I just realized? Can people in... Well, let me get up on the mic. Unless you wanted to go because you said so.
No. Go.
If you don't live in an African nation, shouldn't you just shut up?
Wait, sorry, say again. I don't understand. What do you mean?
I said if not you, but like...
Mm. And I know, but...
And this is myself. I'm saying, if you don't live in an African nation, shouldn't you just kind of just shut up? Because wouldn't you understand just by kind of definition? If you're living in New York, I'm in North Carolina, if you're living in Florida, if you're living in Texas, if you're living in Paris or London or Amsterdam or wherever, Don't you get it? Don't you understand why somebody like your mom, your dad, your uncle, you moved from a country that is either underdeveloped for international reasons or local reasons or whatever the reasons are. You understand inherently that there are benefits of being inside of what we call the Western system or structure. So for a footballer to decide, you know, I'm not going to play for France. I'm Clairefontaine. I think I'd rather go play for Mali. But there are people from Mali who will go to France or wherever, and they'll be like, nah, you should play for the home country. Shouldn't you just be quiet? And like, the more I think about it, the more I'm like, maybe I shouldn't really speak about this subject unless I myself take my ass home to Uganda and I set up my shop there and talk about it from a place of like, nah, you should come here and play. I can't really say that right now.
100%.
Like, if you're a Jamaican living in London, you could say, my parents brought me here. I didn't have anything to do with it. No, that's fine. But should you really get on Raheem Sterling? He was born in Kingston. How come he's not playing for England? You have aunts, you have uncles, grandparents. You know why they moved. So doesn't it make sense why a place that doesn't have the resources that were stolen, that you would then need to go to the place where the resources are in order to benefit from them? To me, that kind of makes sense. Now, obviously, it's sad, and we can kind of lament the what if. So the guy says, you know, would an African nation have won? It's hard to know. You could look at, you know, the French national team, for example, and you could say, that Africa won a World Cup. Well, Africa's not a country. So where are these players coming from? So Kante would go to Mali. Pogba would go to Guinea. I'm not sure where Matuidi's ancestral home is, but he would go somewhere. Sissoko would go another place. Like, they're not all going to one place in Africa, this thing. They have to go to different places. So I don't know how the talent would be dispersed. But yeah, the more I think about it, I'm just like, maybe I should shut the fuck up on this one.
Well, no, as someone who lived in Nigeria for the first...
You can speak on it.
Yeah.
I think I'm just going to shut the fuck up on this one.
You know, look, someone who's lived in Nigeria for the first 10 years of my life...
I'm staring at a Stokely Carmichael book, and I'm like, he actually moved to Guinea. So when you said Guinea, I was like, I just looked up at the book, and I was like...
So basically, as someone who has lived in Nigeria for the first 10 years of my life, goes back and forth, and just sort of knows the lay of the land in Africa, man, things have gotten better and improved, but you will still run into issues, specifically with federations. And there is still an organization issue, bribery, money issue, and all this kind of corruption issues. Those things still exist. And for someone coming into that environment, it could be a culture shock. And my thing about this is that choose wherever you want to go. But then someone sent me a list of all of the guys who could have played for DR Congo. So yeah, there was this guy from football, and this guy is from Hong Kong. I said, man, what if Lukaku?
We did that.
Like, yeah, Lukaku, Benteke,
Wan-Bissaka.
So my thing is that. So you know what? Again, I have no beef with you guys choosing where you chose, but if let's say you are aware of, so let's say you're 15, 16, and say, oh my gosh, and you've come up together, say, guys, if we all hook up and we just all pick DR Congo, we could create something like a crew. But again, the issue is Wan-Bissaka is in England. Lukaku is in Belgium. So all these guys are different, and they've got different lives, different upbringing, different paths. So it's very hard for them to be like, boom, 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 let me call this guy and say what. So, and the flip side is, for Lukaku, I can't begrudge him making the decision of, I have a better chance of winning an international trophy and displaying my skill on the biggest stage in the world, at the World Cup, for Belgium than I do for DR Congo. Because every single player wants to play at the World Cup. Everyone does. That is everyone's dream.
Yeah.
Like your dream is Champions League, World Cup. That's the dream of every player. So
right.
It's unfortunate, and this is why it goes to the whole point that Africa is never coming close to winning a World Cup for a long time.
I agree. What I won't shut up about, though, is y'all got to stop hiring these brick coaches, bro.
European rejects.
Uganda's coach is like some no-name guy from England who I think he's like he's probably our age, somewhere around there. It's just like, where did you find this guy? Like, no wins in three games. Like, if you're going to hire a foreign coach, at least make it a good one. Not just, oh, some white guy came into the office today. Let's give him a job. Like, no. I'll complain about that. But as for players picking, like, England, France, Spain, I think we all kind of understand. There's a reason there are boats with hundreds of people trying to get into Italy over the Mediterranean. Yeah. Like, there's a reason why that's happening. And, also, of course... Oh, no, go ahead.
Something very interesting. We were sort of discussing international football on Sunday, and there's this guy from Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that he believes that Canada is going to have a... He doesn't think they're going to win the World Cup, but they're actually going to have a serious football team in many years because their immigrant program. And he said that, you know, Canada is one of the countries that lets in a lot of immigrants. And he says that Canada... Now, this was shocking. He said that Canada is sort of getting a bit cold on ice hockey, because just me from the outside, they say that no, ice hockey will always be the most beloved sport in Canada and they'll always love it. But says, well, because of the whole racism issue and everything, a lot of Canadians are sort of looking at ice hockey a bit funny. And he says that with immigrants coming through, obviously Alphonso Davies being one, Canada may actually be able to actually maybe put a lot of investment in football going forth. So the fact is, you will see a lot more of a France situation moving forth, because Africa will continue producing the talents. Because, which is why I said, of course, an African team can win a World Cup. Of course, they can. You see, Pele was right. But what Pele didn't factor in was the lack of organization and the corruption of African sides. He didn't factor in, but he was right in the sense of we understand the physicality of the black man. And if you now find those that already have the physicality, but they have the intelligence, the skill, the technique, and so forth, they're beating these Europeans.
Mm.
Of course, they will beat them, because their physicality is what will also give them that edge. Because if they have same technique, same thing, but that physicality of I can get to that ball more, I can run to that ball a lot quicker, that is what will give them this edge in that quarterfinal, that semi. Because I'd say, like, that was why Cameroon in 1990 was such a big thing. Look, they beat the defending champions in the opening game, and they were 50 minutes away from beating England, you know, and making it to the semifinals. You know, even like Nigeria,
Senegal in 2002?
Yeah, Senegal in 2002. Like, Maldini fouled Amunike, and he should have been sentenced off.
This guy's not going to let it go.
Never let that go. He fouled him, so and Nigeria would have most likely beaten Spain in that semi.
Let it go, dog.
I think they would have beaten Bulgaria beaten Spain in the quarter, beaten Bulgaria in the semi, and yeah, would have gotten death by Brazil.
They would have won the final, of course.
No.
Okay, Brazil so just quickly to the Canada point, there's a thing called the Golden Horseshoe, and this is like it's in southern Ontario. Just think like the greater Toronto area, basically. In parts beyond, but not too much. I think Canada has like 38, we'll call it 40 million people, so I'm not talking out of turn. There's 40 million people in Canada. It's a big country, but most of them live within, we'll call it like 100 miles from America, right? Or maybe that's a little bit too much, 200 miles, we'll put it that way. But this Golden Horseshoe, this place has, I think, 10 million out of the 40 million people that live in Canada. And of that 10 million, I think half of them are non-white. So we're talking South Asian, East Asian, Native, Middle Eastern, African, that kind of demographic. It's quite similar, I'd say, to London. In the sense that, like, London, England, where the demographics of the larger country are, you know, you'll see 97% white people. But if you go to London, it's probably half and half between immigrant populations or non-white populations and white people. So when the person said talks about the how Canada can grow looking forward, I do think, number one, basketball is probably going to be the biggest sport in Canada, then football, then hockey. But you just have to give it a little bit of time. There's a good documentary on Netflix called The Carter Effect. And it's about how, you know, the Toronto Raptors were an expansion team and Vince Carter came and he was like the guy that really propelled basketball in the country, or at least in Toronto. But how Toronto goes is kind of how Canada goes generally. So, except Quebec, they're their own thing. But I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. And the social programs that Canada has are dependent largely on the tax revenue that they get, which is why you'll bring in Syrian refugees from Liberia, wherever like a struggle is, because you need more people. Like, the birth rate isn't that great, as we know, in most developed Western countries, if you want to put it that way. So you need more people to come in, and hopefully their children will pay into the tax system. So, you know, the guys we know, like Abdul, like Red, like Phil, like all those guys that we know, like, you don't think their kids are going to grow up and, I'm not playing hockey. Like, their dads are going to want them to play football and basketball or whatever the case is. So, yeah, it's coming. So the World Cup is in 2026. I don't know if that might be too soon, but 2030... it's going to be looking good. It's going to be looking good. I'll have two teams to root for that will disappoint me.
So do you think Canada will take football seriously a lot more than America?
Oh, of course. Of course. Because America, there's already too much. There's too much. And the population of people who are not native to Canada is a lot more than the population that's probably not native to America. I'll put it that way.
That's really interesting to see.
And they're coming with their own culture, which football is paramount. So you know, we were talking off camera about, like, a lot of the people that you might see, you'll see America, UK. I'll bet you your third or fourth country is Canada in terms of, like, who watches your YouTube channel.
It is Canada.
All right, last two. Do you think the players and nations with media backing protesting Qatar about human rights when some of these players play for City, PSG and other morally questionable clubs? I'm not saying it's wrong, but it is a double standard from the whole footballing world.
Okay, you can make the argument. I don't see, for me, I don't know the details, bro. I don't want to speak on something that I don't have full research on. And I'm sorry, your Facebook or Twitter link isn't proper research that I'm going to use. So until I know something as true, hardcore, factual evidence, I can't speak on stuff.
I think footballers generally do not associate football itself as being a tool of oppression. So,
if the money that you're being paid from is coming from oppression?
You see, I don't know if they necessarily correlate the two. I think you can recognize that in some countries, which I don't know if we need to name, but because I could name America quite easily. I don't think it should be exported to Qatar and Russia. America does their own imperialism that we should probably worry about before you start looking in other people's backyards. But I don't know if footballers... I think you understand that your platform has power and that if you put on human rights that, okay, maybe we could start a dialogue or something. But do you necessarily relate that, hey, football has its own human rights abuse issues that need to be dealt with? There's famine, there's drought, there's you know, there's a civil war here, there's a civil war there. Like, let's use our platform to stop it. So we put on human rights. Okay, cool. But then somebody would be like, okay, aren't you being paid by somebody who does XYZ? And we're like, oh damn, I guess we are. Like, do we stop getting paid? No, but human rights still. So football is used as a tool of oppression. I think footballers should probably be a little bit more smart on that one. Last one. When was the last truly competitive Champions League final where both teams were evenly matched and the game didn't end 1-0 or with the losing team being run over by the winners? But from Black Emoji. So when was the last really good Champions League final? I would say 2013.
Yeah, well, basically, the for me, in my opinion, there've only been two. Bayern PSG and Bayern Munich Dortmund.
Bayern Munich Dortmund, I think, was very even.
Yes, it was tight, but you always felt that Bayern Munich are going to win this game.
Ooh, I don't know if I felt that.
Oh, no. I felt that they're the better team. I remember Dortmund scored through a penalty. Eventually, you just felt like if eventually Bayern Munich will win this game. See, Bayern Munich PSG, I really had no idea. Because Bayern Munich PSG, for me, that is the closest and tightest final that I've ever watched, because I really felt like, if bro, either team can win.
So, okay, if we start from 13 and we say that's the benchmark that you have to beat, 14 doesn't beat it.
Mm-mm.
15 can't beat it.
Nope.
16, remind me, Madrid.
Yeah, okay, 16, yeah, that was Atletico.
Atletico again.
Carrasco and Atletico Bale.
Yeah.
But Ramos said he touched it. And then penalties by Real Madrid.
17 was nope. Juventus. That wasn't, yeah. That was a close. With
18, nope.
No, 19, let's not talk
about it. No. See, 19 is the worst final of all time. That is the worst final of all time. So,
Brexit final.
Yeah.
20 is the closest to 13. I'll give you that one.
No, but see, it makes sense because, see, whenever you're in a final, it's so close. So, therefore, you feel it a lot more inhibited.
Yeah.
So, you're like, guys, nobody can make a mistake. We must not make a mistake because this is it here. We are the final now.
So you feel the nerves. When you get to the final of Champions League, World Cup, Copa, like the teams that get there are there for a reason. Like they're good teams. So they're not going to be too many errors to exploit. Yeah, when you think about the 14 final, it's kind of boring, but it was always going to be that way. There were chances here or there scattered, but you're dealing with two really good defenses. So it's going to need something special from Schürrle and Götze in order to get the goal. That's why the 18 final was pretty weird, that it was that open. But you are dealing with Croatia, who got there, I still don't know how. They were taking on France. So anyway, this has been the Talking Tactics podcast. We do this every Tuesday. Thank you guys for your questions, for sending everything in. Much appreciated. Half Hope, where can people reach you?
Depends.
I'm at Daniel Taluk. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Talking Tactics. Leave us a 5-star review. We'll read on the show.
And also remember to join our Patreon, man, where we talk about real issues.
Yep.
Like pregnancy.
Oh, okay. We will see you guys next week. Talking Tactics podcast. Sometimes funny, sometimes serious.
Always football.
Indeed. Peace, peace, peace. Sports Social Podcast Network.